From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. In her day, Maria Callas electrified the world with her voice, with her performances. Much has been written about her triumphs and failures, her dramatic presence on stage and in her personal life. Now, a new documentary looks at Maria Callas in her own words, and it's a fascinating portrait. This hour on Point, artist and woman Maria Callas. Join us. Did you ever see her perform? What do you know about Maria Callas, her music, her life? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook, where they're at On Point Radio. Joining me this hour from Paris, France, is Tom Wolfe, writer, director, and producer of the new award-winning documentary, Maria by Callas. Tom, welcome to On Point, and congratulations on the film.
Thank you so much. Hi, Jane.
Hello. Help us understand the extent of Maria Callas' fame and reputation as a singer and as a star around the world.
It's quite fascinating. You know, when I started this work about 6 years ago, I barely knew who she was. And I came to discover, first, of course, her incredible life and artistry, but also the outreach of her fame that covers still all the world. I found people in various countries of all ages, all cultural backgrounds, you know, people not necessarily listening to classical music or to opera, but they were listening to Callas. And I found that to be quite a phenomenon that 40 years after her passing, she's still nowadays such a present figure. And, you know, I was privileged with this film to travel in several countries. The film is out in nearly 40 countries, and it's been such a privilege to travel and see for myself, with my own eyes, how in the different countries where the film was released, people coming to the theaters of all kinds of ages, you know, even parents bringing children or grandparents. And it, you know, it's fascinating to see an artist that is so universal, and I think she's quite unique in many ways, and in that way also.
Let's listen for a moment. Here is Maria Callas. This is her 1958 performance in Paris of Casta Diva from Norma. In this short excerpt, you can hear how she doesn't rush. She lets time build the drama. Callas, not only a phenomenon in her lifetime, Tom Wolfe, but all these many years after her death, still considered one of the most outstanding sopranos of the 20th century, no?
Perhaps even of all times, who knows?
So she said that there were two people in her, Maria and Callas. And I want to play this clip from a 1970 interview with David Frost, explaining how this human being and this world-famous diva coexisted within herself.
On the whole, there are two people in me. I would like to be Maria, but there is the Callas that I have to live up to. So I'm coping with both as much as I can.
And in a crunch, who has to win, Maria or Callas?
I like to think that they both go together, because Callas has been Maria in my singing and in my work. My own self has been there every second. I've done nothing falsely. I've worked with all honesty. So Maria has, if somebody really tries to listen to me seriously, one will find all of myself in there.
I would like to be Maria, she says, but there is the Callas that I have to live up to. I love that. You made that duality, Tom Wolfe, the central theme of this film. Tell me how these two personalities communicate with and sometimes struggle and even sacrifice one to the other. How do you see it?
Yeah, that was exactly the starting point of the film. This idea that during her whole life, she had to cope and struggle with the two aspects, her life as a woman and her life as an artist and also as the tremendously famous public figure that she had became. And you find out watching the film that actually her whole life was about sacrificing one for another. She first had to sacrifice Maria for Callas, and then later on Callas for Maria. In other words, she first sacrificed completely her own personal life and you know, the family that she would have dreamed of in her life as a woman in order to have and gain this amazing career, this worldwide fame. And later on in her life, after having, you know, traveled the world and sung all year long, opening numerous seasons in various theaters and opera houses, she tries eventually to go back to Marie and to fulfill that lack of personal happiness. Mm. And that coincides with the moment she meets Aristotle Onassis. And that is the point where she decides to sort of focus on her personal life and step away from the stage. And what she doesn't realize is by doing that, she is actually sacrificing Callas. She's sacrificing her career and also her vocal instrument, because a few years later, when she will try to come back on stage, she will find out quite tremendous vocal difficulties that arose from the fact that she stopped practicing, you know, like an athlete.
We'll hear more about that love story and really that heartache later on. Tell me first about her repertoire. It was extraordinary. She was heralded by critics for her, not only for her vocal technique, but for her dramatic gifts. Describe that for us, if you will, her repertoire.
Well, when she came to opera in the middle of the 20th century, she arrived like a tsunami. She was a revolution in opera. She brought back a style of singing that was completely forgotten, that dated back to the era of bel canto, the origins of romantic Italian opera, and she brought back that style of music into fashion, and also she made it incredibly popular. She took opera out of the opera houses and the elites that were going to the opera houses to make it a very popular style of music and accessible to everyone. And I think she achieved that by the very fact that she was bringing her characters to life. She was merging a tremendous capacity for technique and vocal interpretation with incredible acting through the singing, through the music, that makes you listen to her and see the character and feel all the emotions of the character through her singing. I think that would made her a very, very unique singer and actress. It was always the two together, and made her very popular. As you see in the film, back in the days, there were queues of youngsters waiting outside for her comeback, and that is a very, very relevant image of how popular she was.
Here is Maria Callas being interviewed by Edward R. Murrow in 1958. Murrow begins by quoting Leonard Bernstein, who calls Callas, quote, pure electricity.
Good evening, Madam Callas.
Good evening, Mr. Murrow.
And welcome home.
Thank you very much.
I know that many people are under the impression that you're Italian and are not aware that actually you grew up in New York. Isn't that right?
Yes. Not only was I born in New York, not in Brooklyn, as they say. Not that there's anything wrong with Brooklyn, of course, but just for the sake of truth. But I was brought up in America, in New York, and I'm rather proud of that, too.
So Maria Callas, she sang the serious classical operas. She also sang the bel canto works of Bellini and Rossini. She sang the masterpieces of Verdi and Puccini. I thought it was interesting in your film, Tom Wolfe, that there are no critics. There are no opera experts. So every person watching this film makes their own judgment by listening to Maria Callas. And hearing the interviews that were only used and only taken and only broadcast in her lifetime. It was a bit of a time machine for audiences, wouldn't you say, Tom?
It's definitely a time machine. And that was the whole idea of this film. You see, when I started off, obviously, there had been lots of books written about her, some television programs. There has been already quite a lot of stuff that had been done about her. And for me, it was very important to have a whole new take. And when I did my first research, reading the books and watching the previous television programs and so on, I found out that we were kind of lacking of an understanding of who she actually was, a true understanding of who she was as a woman and as an artist. And beyond that, who was the woman behind the legend? Who was Maria? That's why the film is called Maria by Callas and not Callas by Maria, because it is through Callas's words that Maria is revealed. And through this process of having a film entirely in her own words, with no narrator, no critics, no other interviews than hers, it gives an experience for the audiences of a very intimate dialogue with her. And at the end of the film, people have a feeling that they have gotten to know her truly and to know who she truly was.
We're talking about the life of soprano Maria Callas this hour. What makes her special to this day? You can join the conversation. What do you hear in this voice? We'll go to break here, hearing Maria Callas performing from Madame Butterfly, as featured on the 2014 album Pure Maria Callas. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the life of the Greek-American soprano Maria Callas this hour, who practically ruled the world of opera through the 1950s and 60s. You hear her there in a live performance of Adio del Passato from the opera Traviata. Maria Callas sung that in Lisbon in 1958. You can join the conversation. Do you have Maria Callas's music on your stereo, your playlist? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest this hour, Tom Wolfe, writer, director, and producer of the new award-winning documentary Maria by Callas. Tom Wolfe, take us back to Maria Callas's childhood. She often spoke of her unhappy youth. Tell us how her mother spotted her talent at 5 years old and really pushed her after that.
Yes, that's exactly how it happened. She was rather young, and her mother found that she had something special. She first started the piano and then started singing very, very early age. And her mother tried to sort of take advantage of this. She enrolled her in various contests and radio shows for children, for talented children. And she ended up forcing her in a way to start working and working very hard at a very young age, depriving Callas and the young Maria from a happy childhood. That's the way she describes it herself in the film. And the way we decided to feature that is through her letters and excerpts of her unfinished memoirs. And Joyce DiDonato is interpreting Maria's words so that we keep on that immersive feeling that we have from the very beginning of the film when Maria speaks about her childhood and about her mother.
Right. So over 4 years, you did some painstaking research, went around the world to find these old friends and acquaintances of Maria Callas. Were they open to speaking with you?
Well, not necessarily in the beginning, because this quest that I started and that took me for the first 2 years all around the world, searching and reaching out to Callas's friends and the people who were closest to her, it was not necessarily very easy from the beginning, because you see, a lot of her close friends had been approached before by either journalists or writers or various people reporting about Callas. And they were always very cautious about speaking about her. She was a very private person in her own lifetime, and the people who were closest to her remained in the same way. But I have to say that from the moment we started talking and from the moment they understood that this project had nothing to do with anything that had been done before, and that the whole point of this film was to have it entirely in her own words, something that had never been done before, they were all on board. And I was surprised myself that they all unanimously told me this is exactly what she would have wanted, and maybe the only thing she would have wanted, to be able to tell her own story and her own side of the story, because there had been so many mistruths said about her.
And that was what was so remarkable.
She always wanted
to... friends that gave you the 8mm films, the audio tapes, the reels, the letters, the photos. I mean, this memorabilia was quite extensive. Yeah.
Absolutely. They nourished this project tremendously, because the film features a lot of never-before-seen footage and never-before-heard recordings and of course, her letters and unfinished memoirs. All of that allowed me to create this film in this particular way came from her friends and her loved ones, and a lot of this material had never been disclosed before. So it was very exciting and at the same time a huge responsibility to bring this material out for the first time to the public.
Let me get a listener in here, Felicity in Bristol, Rhode Island. Hi, Felicity. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I grew up in Europe, as you may tell from my accent, listening to Maria Callas. And there's a pretty high bar for sopranos there. And though she was not always considered the smoothest of sopranos, what came across was her passion. Of course, she sang all these coloratura roles, but the passion of the woman versus the passion of the singer. I think her whole life, because of her mother perhaps, pushing her forward, her whole life through her song, through her relationships, were a quest for value of Maria, the woman. You mentioned, or your guest, Mr. Wolf, mentioned the separation there, or how it was always two Marias. But I think they all join together in the one Maria.
That's wonderful remembrance. Felicity, thank you. And the passion of Maria Callas. Let me bring in another voice to this conversation now, Gregor Benko. He's a music historian and co-author of Chopin's Prophet. He saw several of Maria Callas's final performances in New York City in 1974, and he joins us now from New York. Gregor, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
We just heard Felicity talk about the passion of Maria Callas. How did you see her? What was it about her musicality that was so striking?
Well, I suppose there was something about it that just spoke to me in a way that nothing else ever had. The first time I ever heard her voice, it was like taking a jolt of heroin or something. I was a teenager, but it changed my life, as a matter of fact. I had never heard anything like that and responded to it. The impetus was musical as well as dramatic. I think she was the greatest musician who ever made recordings through their own voice.
In fact, you say Maria Callas is one of the three singers who changed the course of opera. My goodness.
Well, I think that's generally accepted by historians of music. There were three, interestingly enough, they all began with the letter C. Caruso, the tenor, Chaliapin, the basso, and Callas, the soprano. Mm-hmm. The power of their art was so great that they actually changed the art of singing through their efforts.
So long before Pavarotti and Placido Domingo, Maria Callas was this rare sort of singer who was also a household name, right? How would you describe opera singers before Maria Callas and after Maria Callas?
Well, that's there were equally interesting and dramatic and controversial singers before Callas. But most of it had to do with their personal lives and their relationships to various members of royalty and their interesting sexual lives, whereas Callas had a gloss of glamour in that kind, but the main thing was her artistry. She was a very great artist and a very great musician. And now that the shine of the glamour is in the past, we're left with her artistry and her musicality through recordings, and she continues to exert an incredible power over young people, people who have never listened to any old recordings of any old artists, are still, to this day, transfixed the way I was by hearing her for the first time, as Tom Wolfe was.
Mm-hmm. You saw her.
Absolutely.
Yes, you saw her, Gregor, several times during her farewell tour. What was that like?
Well, it was very sad because she was just a wraith of what she had been earlier, and the struggle that you could see she was going through was personal as well as musical, and it would have been better for her reputation if she hadn't, but it meant so much to me to actually see her, even though she did not sing well during that last series of concerts with her friend DiStefano. We can't erase history, and she did it, and it meant something to a lot of people like me, but the fact is she was no longer singing well.
Here's Callas returning to New York in 1965 after a seven-year absence. Fans lined up all night to get tickets. Here are three of those fans in line being interviewed by a reporter.
Maria Callas, she's the greatest. Only for her would I do this. Nobody else.
Why do you think she's so great?
Well, first of all, as a technician, she's magnificent. As an actress, she is. There's no word to describe her. And just her magnetism. She could sing a poor performance. I've never had an occasion to hear it, but she could, and she would still be just as magnetic as ever.
What's going to happen when she finally gets to appear here after 7 years?
She'll get around a 30-minute ovation, and most likely will be standing. Even if I have to be the only one to stand, I'm very sure.
Gregor Benko, there were such high expectations for Maria Callas. And you talk about sort of her decline. She was very honest and fearless about her decline, was she not?
I personally, I don't know. I think professionally, yes. She told reporters and journalists that her voice might not be what it had been, but that she had to try. It was the result of the sad events at the end of her life and the end of her affair with Onassis, the way he dropped her for Jacqueline Kennedy, that she almost inwardly died. She must have had a nervous breakdown, and she was founded inside herself to come back, but perhaps it might have been better if she hadn't had those final series of concerts, but she must not be defined by the last sad concerts that she gave. She has to be defined by the magnificent work that she had done for decades before that.
Tom Wolfe, let's rewind a little bit. It's no coincidence that she decided to sing Carmen for the first time in her life at the very moment that her relationship with Aristotle Onassis was beginning. In fact, all the arias in the film that you have produced have the same kind of double meaning for this woman, personally and for her status as a public figure. Talk about her private life and her relationship and how that impacted her career.
Absolutely. You know, it's fascinating for me to hear Felicity speaking about that, about how she was taken by the passion of the woman, sometimes even more than the artist, but the two were together. And that is exactly how it was. I found out that there was always a connection between Maria and Callas, and that whatever was happening in her life as a woman was actually nourishing and was sort of used by La Callas in order to nourish her interpretations and the arias that she sung. And in the film, the arias, the music, is absolutely a part, a fundamental part of the narration. We actually learn a lot from the arias that are subtitled in the film and translated in order for us not only to understand the lyrics that she's singing, but also to understand how those lyrics are relevant in her own life, in Maria's life, at the particular time when she's singing such or such aria. And I think we learn a lot from that. It's another layer of understanding. It's a whole subtext to the film is through the singing and through the arias. And that is what she describes in the beginning of the film as being the link between Maria and Callas when she says, if someone really tries to listen to me, they will find all of myself in there. That's exactly what it means.
Let's go back to the phones. Kathleen is in Harrisburg, Virginia. Hi, Kathleen. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make a comment. I think it's kind of a similar strain that's already been represented here. I grew up listening to opera, had not really thought much about Maria Callas simply because she just didn't seem as bright and her technique not as smooth as other singers. And it was only when a friend of mine who was a very passionate Frank Sinatra fan had, you know, brought to my attention that, you know, both had very great voices when they were younger. And as they got older, obviously, there was the degradation of the voice and the vocal quality. But it was almost like an emotional technique had improved. And I think like a previous caller had said that, you know, she sang with the passion of a woman. And I think that really nails it for me. I went back and listened with new ears. I actually went back and listened to Sinatra with new ears. Mm. But it was a really interesting comparison where, you know, the vocal technique fades, but, you know, the emotional acuity they brought to their art really shined in later years, I felt.
I appreciate that. Excellent comment, Kathleen. Thank you. Gregor Benko, jump in. How did you see Maria Callas' technique evolve to Kathleen's point?
Well, there's several periods of Callas' art, and you can follow them through recordings. When she was at the peak of her powers, technically, she was absolutely as great as anyone who ever existed. There's recordings of Lucia from Germany in 1955, where you could take dictation from her singing and write out the score just following what she did. But, of course, there were good days and bad days. And when I was growing up, right after I discovered her, I discovered in the world of other opera fans around me that there was this feud going on about who was greater, Callas or Tebaldi, Renata Tebaldi, a favorite of Italian soprano at the time. And that's all died out. And now we can see in retrospect just where Callas stands in relationship to Tebaldi, but not just Tebaldi, to all other singers who came before her. And unless you have some reason to do with your own personality, you have to decide that she certainly, in her best days, was technically and in every other way one of, if not the greatest singer of our time.
Gregor Benko is a music historian and co-author of Chopin's Prophet. Gregor, thank you so much for your time and your remembrances of Maria Callas. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
I'm speaking with filmmaker Tom Wolfe about his new film, Maria by Callas. And you can join the conversation. What do you hear in Callas's life story, in the drama, in the heartache, in the brilliance? We'll go out and break here with a documentary that features Maria Callas singing Vienna ti affretta from the opera Macbeth. Here's a sample of her live performance. This is in Hamburg in 1959. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're looking at the life and the art of soprano Maria Callas this hour and the new documentary about her life in theaters now called Maria by Callas. We were listening there to Maria Callas performing from Tosca as featured on the 2014 album Pure Maria Callas. Listeners, we'd love to have you join us. How has opera changed, evolved? Is there another Maria Callas out there, to your mind? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. My guest, Tom Wolf, who directed, wrote, and co-produced the award-winning documentary. Let me play this sound. This is Maria Callas at a press conference while on tour in Dallas in 1958, the day after she received a telegram informing her that she'd been fired by the Metropolitan Opera. You'll then hear Rudolph Bing speak, the director of the Met, explaining to CBS's Mike Wallace about that famous dispute.
I have been brought to exasperating situations, as you fully realize, and yet I have borne them with calmness and with patience. Time does heal lots of things, and I'm quite sure time will prove what I am actually.
There came the point where I had to decide, now is Madame Callas running the Met or am I running the Met? And at that time, I was still running the Met and said so and canceled our agreement.
So you really did fire Maria Callas from the Metropolitan?
If you want to use that ugly word, that is so, yes. I don't think Maria Callas isn't fired. Maria Callas is severed of a relationship.
Let's get a caller in here to this point. Carmen in Miami, Florida. Hi, Carmen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I have always wondered how true is a story that Rudolph Bing fired Maria Callas because she had asked for $1 above Renata Tebaldi's contract.
Ah, all right. Carmen, thank you. Tom Wolf, do you know?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, we explore that episode in the film, and we see the backstage story to it. And the truth is really it was not at all about financial discussions. It could have played a part. You find out in the film that through her letters and memoirs, her husband was behind all the negotiations with the theaters. And at some point, he was being rather difficult, asking for always more and more. And you find out that he actually went on and kept all that money when they separated. That's another story. But the truth behind the feud between Callas and Bing is really the fact that Bing wanted her to sing the same old performance, the same old productions and the repertoire that they had at the Met. And using her fame that was tremendous at that time in the mid-late 50s, and sort of using her name to fill up the theater that is the Met. And she, on the other hand, as an artist, had an incredible desire to do new productions and new performances, to open a whole new repertoire to the audiences, operas that people weren't exposed to, like Norma or Sonnambula or Medea, that she was actually performing in Dallas when she found out that she had been fired. So I think the feud really came about the artistic disagreement between the two rather than anything else. But it was very violent because it all happened sort of in the public eye, and you can see more of that in the film. Mm-hmm.
Carmen, thanks so much for the call. I should add here, Rudolf Bing, the director of the Met, later said that Callas was the most difficult artist he'd ever worked with because, quote, she was so much more intelligent. Other artists you could get around, but Callas you could not get around. She knew exactly what she wanted and why she wanted it. And despite everything, he remained an admirer. Carmen, thanks again. I want to bring another voice into the conversation now. Carmen Giannotasio is an Italian soprano known for her command of the bel canto repertoire, which she brought back to life, actually, by Maria Callas. Carmen was performed at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. She's performed at London's Royal Opera and many other theaters around the world. She joins me today from Naples, Italy, where she's rehearsing Callas' signature role, Norma. Carmen, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you. How do you view Maria Callas? How does she place among the opera singers, the great opera singers of the world?
Well, she's a goddess. She's beyond. She cannot be compared to any other singer of nowadays. I mean, of the past, present, and future, I think. She's something that is like, I consider her like a Homer in the poetry. Mm. So she is on the top and all the rest, you know, coming down. Mm. I'm sorry to say, because I'm a soprano too, but she's not human, as I consider her.
Maria Callas once said that when music fails to agree to the ear, to soothe the ear, to soothe the heart and the senses, then it has missed the point. What is it about her musicality that was so special, so unique?
It's unique because every single note, it comes from the heart, from the soul. It's special. Every single note has a color that fulfills, you know, the rest of the music. It's incredible what she's able to do. And she's not even a native speaking Italian, but her Italian is perfect. Mm. The way she phrases it is just perfect. She seems like to be a real Italian, really.
What is it like to be singing Norma, her signature role, right now in Italy?
Well, actually, I am just rehearsing before singing it next month in Munich. So I already sang this role like 3 times, I think, mm-hmm. and I'm practicing now with my pianist. And of course, I think she's an inspiration for every soprano, for every singer. But you cannot imitate her, because if you only try to imitate her, you fail.
But a lot do, Carmen. A lot of sopranos try to sing like Maria Callas. Many try to emulate her. I guess there's something impressive not only about her musicality, but her strength and her independence and our earlier caller, Felicity, her passion. No? Her passion.
Yes, of course. I mean, if it's concerning passion, I can tell you that when you have, you know, like the strength, the passion for your job, you're putting all your emotions in. But if you want to imitate her, like technically, she had a very particular and personal technique. And if you attempt to make all the colors she was doing with her voice, you fail, really. We have many examples from the past, and also it's incredible what she was doing with her voice, but that was unique. And even when I was very young, you know, starting like in my first 20s, I tried, you know, to imitate, but after like 10 minutes, I was with no voice because that is not,
so
you know,
difficult.
Made on me. She had a very special, and that's why I say, not human instrument. It was La Callas, and we have to accept this. She was La Callas. Nobody can be compared.
Nobody can be compared to Maria Callas. No. Carmen Giattasio, Italian soprano, currently rehearsing her role in Norma, which she'll be performing soon in Italy, Germany, and Greece.
Not in Germany, yes.
Carmen, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go back to the phones. Eric in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. The major caveat that many devotees have with the film is that we've all been waiting our whole life to see Callas at her peak. Many things that she did were televised, concerts and complete performances. Her Cologne Sonnambula was the first color telecast in Europe. And so we would love for Tom to try to unearth some of these so people can see her at her peak. Her last concert, great concert, was in September of 1959, September 23rd in London. I have a friend that saw that on television in the 80s, and somehow it's vanished. And if Tom could, through his contacts, unearth that concert, unearth the Cologne Sonnambula, unearth other things that were televised, those could be shown in the theater and they would sell out.
Well, let's ask him about it. Eric, thank you so much. Tom Wolf?
Thank you, Eric. Well, you know, I spent 5 years running around the world trying to unearth as many things as I could, not only, as I mentioned earlier, through Callas's closest friends, but also through every possible institution and private and public archive and libraries and broadcast archives that I've been to all around the world in these last 5 years. And you see, unfortunately, back in the 50s and the 60s, a lot of the things that had been broadcast were not preserved. There was not that idea in her lifetime that she was so special that everything she did as an artist would have to be preserved for posterity. Very unfortunately, it's only after her death, actually even a few years after, that people realized how unique and special she was and how important the testimony of her artistry was. So I was able to unearth as many things as, you know, the film displays her Butterfly in 1955, which is the only time she performed that on stage, which opens the film, is an incredible testimony of Callas's artistry and portraying the famous Japanese butterfly with all the gestures and the face expressions that are so unique and that she mastered even for those very rare and few performances. So the film features a lot of footage that had never been seen before, including footage that was filmed from the audience of her very last performances of Norma in Paris in 1965 in the production that was created for her by Franco Zeffirelli. So I think that people will get to see a lot more than what we thought existed. But I think that really, in my point of view, this is it. I have heard many stories of archives that were tossed, unfortunately, or that did not survive because of the fragility of the material back in the days. You have to realize that this material, you know, is today 50 and 60 years old, and real tapes were very fragile. So all that we have today is already pretty much a miracle, and I dedicated a lot of time getting back to as much as possible the original reels and bring out in the film all of this material, some of it which I found strikingly original in color. And all of that makes it very exciting, I think, and gives us as close as possible experience of Kallas as an artist on stage.
Let me play a clip here. This is opera singer Joyce DiDonato voicing excerpts from Maria Callas's diaries. Here Joyce reads as Callas describes how her husband, Battista Meneghini, convinced her to join Greek tycoon Aristotle Onassis on his yacht, the Christina, and how that led to her affair with Aristotle Onassis.
It was destiny that gave birth to my friendship with Aristo. I joined the cruise on the Christina to please my husband, who was very keen to go. Battista only cared for money and position. What can you do when you no longer trust your husband? I thought of Meneghini as a sheltering screen at first to protect me from the outside world, and he did that until my fame went to his head. Battista should have used more diplomacy in his negotiations with the theaters. His methods backfired, and I had to pay the consequences.
Tom Wolfe, just a minute or so left here. Maria Callas had this relationship with Aristotle Onassis. He was really the love of her life. He leaves her for Jackie Onassis, but never really cut off that relationship. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I do believe so, that he was the love of her life. And I think that to an extent she was the love of his life. As a matter of fact, this story that is rather well known of him leaving Kallas for Jackie is somewhat not told entirely. And that's part of what the film reveals through what I found out through Kallas's writings that have never been published before and that are a big part of the narration of the film, thanks to Joyce DiDonato's interpretation of Maria's words. We discover that there was a continuation to that relationship after the breakup and his marriage with Jackie. We find out that he was back at her door only a few weeks later, and that he was very aware of the sort of mistake that he had done in doing that. And also we discover how their relationship continued up to the very last days of Onassis's life. Actually, Onassis died only a year and a half before her. And we hear in the film the testimonials of Maria's words in that very last day she saw him at the hospital in Paris. And looking back, I do think they were soulmates, and that's part of what the film explores in Maria by Kallas.
Maria Kallas, reborn to a new generation of audiences in the new award-winning documentary Maria by Kallas. Tom Wolfe, writer, director, co-producer of this new film. Tom, great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure to share this moment with you.
Thank you. We end the program with Maria Kallas performing from Carmen from her live 1962 performance in London. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.